Sunday edition, August 19th, 2001, of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. I'm your host, Robert Norse. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz at 96.3 FM. And it's a foggy Sunday, just a day to curl up next to your radio and nestle next to your telephone and pick up that phone and join in a conversation that hopefully will change the city. We are, of course, working on restoring rights to basic rights to people outside, people who are poor, people who are regularly treated as second-class citizens, and we're talking about homeless people, as well as folks who are just renting and trying to get along and watching their rooms, their garages, the garage they're renting in, their ADUs, their accessory dwelling unit, makeshift survival spots, dry up and disappear as the rents escalate. I'm interested in all these subjects. I encourage you to take an interest with me and give a call to 427-3772. That's the call-in line for Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-FRSC, for those of you who remember letters more easily than numbers. And we can all talk about this stuff. Another subject that we've been talking a lot about lately on the radio, and I've been talking about it particularly, has been Camp Paradise, the clean and sober, neat and tidy campground next to the San Lorenzo River, down about a block and a half away from Denny's, down Felker Street, and under the bridge and up the river about 500 yards, if folks want to go and have a look at it. And the residents there, even though the place apparently is brim full, still invite you to come by and talk and see what they're doing up there, see what's happening. Because the camp has been declared illegal by the city police, by the city manager, by the city attorney, by council members. Illegal not because it's unsanitary, not because it is worse than other shelter around, no, but because it is a situation where homeless people are living outside. And in Santa Cruz, if you live outside or in your vehicle or in any structure that is not a house or hotel, that is illegal under the Santa Cruz Camping Ordinance 6.36, an archaic law passed in 1978 essentially to criminalize hippies and to suit the police force's priorities and agenda of driving such people out of town, which they did systematically in the mid-70s. And then when these people fought back and won a large court case, they set up a city ordinance that criminalized them still further. The most notorious part of that ordinance, of course, is Section 6.36.010A, which is the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance, which actually makes sleeping from 11 to 8:30 in the morning an offense in and of itself. You don't have to be doing anything else wrong if you sleep in a vehicle, anywhere outside, or in any building which is not a house or hotel. And there are a few minor exceptions, but that's generally the case. You are subject to a $54 fine, to being searched, to being arrested, to being cited, to being told to get out of town or move, but move to where, they won't tell you. Because every night, all emergency shelter is full. That's been the word from Karen Brock and Ken Cole over at the Homeless Services Center. In fact, police themselves, it has been said on a number of occasions, have directed homeless people to come to Camp Paradise simply to have a safe place to sleep. And the community around Camp Paradise, the people who have been living there, have been relieved to see the drug traffic essentially stopped in that area, needles cleaned up, garbage cleaned up, where the city took no responsibility. In return, the city is striking back, at least some officials in the city, and they are sending in police to ticket. They are refusing porta-potty services, though I understand a porta-potty has been set up, apparently this time without city permission, or hopefully in the absence of city objection might be a better way to put it, at the top of the levee, so that there will now be two toilets, one a chemical toilet and the other a porta potty, at the top of the levee where the Camp Paradise is situated. It's hardly paradise, as far as I'm concerned, but it certainly is a damn sight better than a lot of the other places around town, and it's homeless folks trying to control their own destiny, trying to deal with an intolerable situation, and the community, helping in that situation. The community realizing that the current laws are unworkable, unfair, cruel, and the current city council just doesn't have the courage, the fortitude, or the wisdom to take the kinds of steps necessary to make the simple changes in the law that would enable homeless people, at least for the moment, to sleep and then eventually set up the kinds of minimal social services that would deal with Santa Cruz's homeless folks here, the 1,000 to 2,000 who are here. And we're hoping to have later in the show a visit from Patricia Maticek, who is on the San Lorenzo River Restoration Task Force. I probably don't have that name quite right, but she has been working to ensure the quality of the river, which has been degraded by, of course, such things as the Seaside Company's 50-year, or is it 60-year, or is it 70-year occupation of the parking lot area, the Tideland area, as well as other areas down there, in collusion with a corrupt city council and succeeding corrupt or cowardly city councils since then. And I'm hoping that she'll be able to come in and be our guest. If not, we're going to play a long interview that I had with her. She is unfortunately not an advocate of Camp Paradise. In fact, she is a critic, and she has criticisms around the environmental effects that she feels camping on the river has. And we're going to hear her perspective, and I really wish she, I hope she gets here, because I know she can make a much more eloquent argument in person, and needs to, this kind of dialogue is the kind of dialogue we need to go on. We need to have an open, honest dialogue between the critics of Camp Paradise and those who are its supporters, because the rights of homeless people and the environmental needs of the community have to be balanced, they have to be reconciled, and they have to be complemented. Both one has to be, I think that they interact together, and that and they will. And there is an ongoing survival reality for homeless people, just as there is an ongoing need to make sure that we have an environment here that remains or is restored to a condition that all of us want, and that is essentially preserves the green belt, stops the paving over of the city, and so forth. So if you want to be a part of this discussion, the phone number here is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, and we're going to be doing a little scouting around, playing some interviews, and waiting for our guest to show up, hoping she will. And let's begin with an interview that happened. Actually, I hit the trail, I think it was Wednesday, or earlier this week, when the word came out that Officer Seeley, the so-called Homeless Services Center officer, is actually a Santa Cruz policeman who's funded by the city to supposedly have special beat over in the homeless area near the Coral Street, the Homeless Services Center at Coral Street, showed up at Camp Paradise and began questioning people in a fashion they found offensive, and that camp co-founder Larry Templeton also found offensive. And here are some of the interviews around that.
Your name is?
Tina Loren from the National Coalition for the Homeless.
What is the National Coalition?
Says hi, how you doing?
Oh, a friendly visit.
Yeah, just a friendly visit. That's all it was.
Okay, and was he friendly to you too?
Yes, sir.
Excellent.
They won't take your...
I'm going to read this ticket, Larry, that you offered to Officer Seeley, but for some reason he resisted arrest, or he resisted ticketing.
Yeah, their ticket here, it's a notice of civil rights violation committed by, check the list, it was police officer this time.
Rather than attorney, a judge.
Attorney, general, judge, all the employments. Then it has the date, same date they issue on our tickets, what time the offense occurred, where was the location, which was Camp Paradise, the city of Santa Cruz, California. The offender's of employment is his position as a police officer. It's unlawfully ticketing of the homeless under section code violation 18 USC 242 misdemeanor USCA 14. It's to the U.S. Attorney's Office. They just refused my ticket, so next time they come back with their ticket, fuck them.
Obstructing an officer, in this case a citizen trying to respond to an unlawful ticketing situation. Now, actually, no tickets were issued this time. Is that correct, Larry?
Yeah.
Did they say anything to you in the main camp when they came through?
Told me if I leave the camp, I was going to jail.
that if you leave the camp, you're going to jail?
Yeah. If I followed him around my camp area, the tents that I own, if I followed him to go into my tents, I would go to jail.
And the man who said this was our very own Homeless Services Center police officer, Mr. Seeley?
Our homeless officer, our homeless hangman.
But you followed anyway, as I've noticed.
Yes, I did.
And for some reason, he didn't jail you. Do you think perhaps he was showing his kind streak?
He ain't got a kind streak one. None.
Thank you.
You know, we made a promise that, hey, if they help us, we wouldn't go to publicity anymore. Well, they want to keep sticking me in the backside. Well, you know what? I'm back, and I'm going to fight the hell out of this place.
All right. Well, thank you, Larry.
Come on, Larry.
Well, hey, don't worry about them cops. He just refused the ticket.
So, did he hassle you guys?
He came over here and questioned us and said that we're not supposed to be here and shit.
What exactly did the officer... What's your first name?
My name's Mark Arroyo. I've been living here for about three weeks now. This place is beautiful for the community and the homeless folks around here, and I want you to know that these officers around here don't realize that this is the best thing that's ever happened to this area. And I also want a voice that I feel that they should not be coming around here harassing us whenever we're only doing the right thing in life and trying to survive.
Well put.
The officers were kind of rude and disrespectful. I don't appreciate it.
What did they actually say to you? Did they speak to you?
They questioned us, wrote us our IDs, asked us for our IDs, and questioned my ID and everything, which is legitimate. I just got my ID.
Did they say they suspected you of a crime, and that was why they were questioning you?
Yes.
What crime were they suspecting you of?
Fraud. They thought my ID was phony.
And why did they ask for your ID in the first place? They can only do that if they're making an arrest or doing a detention and investigation of a crime.
Yes, I know, but they did it anyway. That's what I mean. They're disrespectful.
Are you saying our officers of the law are not respecting the law under which they are, in fact, mandated to act?
I think that they're a little upset about having to come down here and go out of their way, yes.
Well said. Anything you want to add for the audience out there?
No. Have a nice day and have a good heart.
Thank you. There was a woman here who was medicated, you say, and she needed to get some rest?
By the hospital. They got her on Drolofts. This girl can't even stand up. She's nothing but a ball of just shakes. Mm-hmm. And so they told her, get your ass up and get out of here. You know what, Seeley? You keep fucking with me, Seeley. Me and you're going two rounds, pal. In court, one way or the other.
Well said. Apparently, Officer Seeley also told, according to Larry Templeton, campers they couldn't rake the trails and clean up. So, Dirt Cloud tells us that in the last week or so...
Not bullies, they...
...have cleared out people behind Zanatos and Longs because of construction work being done on the levee. What about other parts, like around, across the river or elsewhere?
I've heard across the river.
Hasn't heard of anything.
I haven't even seen them over there.
Okay, cool.
That's where all the heroin traffic is.
Well, you got to keep the business running, you know. I mean. All right, well, it's about 4:30. Yeah, we're in the... Usually, you get ticketed handicap zone, but this time we're talking to a handicapped person who kicks ass. An inveterate fighter against the depredations of Mercy Charities housing. We're talking to...
Eleanor.
And Eleanor, what's the latest? What kind of shenanigans are you up to?
Well, I'm still... in the same hellhole. I still live there.
Referring to the Sycamore Grove complex.
Yes, which has been a constant uphill battle. My lawsuit is moving along in the courts. HUD has been down.
Summarize your lawsuit. Improper treatment of disabled people or handicapped people?
Discrimination in accessibility. Their policies, their practices, the construction and design of the complex adds up to a horrendous life for a handicapped person. And there's really been no... I'm there over a year, maybe 16 months now, and they've done absolutely nothing to correct any of my reasonable requests for reasonable accommodations.
You're talking about Mercy Charities Housing. This is the monopoly shelter provider that is going to build the biggest affordable housing project in the city, the infamous Dolphin Lee project.
Oh, yes, I guess that's moving forward. Well, I guess if I was going to send any message today, it would be to those people who are in the position of approving their construction and their layouts and their building permits, there's been a great deal of oversight and lack of regard for those people that are going to live in the community. And we're not talking about changes that would cost money. Simple, turn the building a different direction. For instance, we have a daycare center with its yard right outside the bedroom windows of handicapped and disabled. And they come out, they're unsupervised children. They're not supposed to be, but they are. And they are not being, how would you say, guided to become good citizens, good children. They're being left, there's bullying going on all the time. They're screaming from 8:30 in the morning until 5:30. They're out there, and a simple turning the building a different direction would have placing the yard someplace else on the other side of the building would have taken it out of the bedrooms of the disabled. In essence, that's what they've done. We're stuck with it. I could go on and on. I don't have the energy now.
Any dates coming up that people should know about if they want to be supportive or learn more?
Well, as far as the HUD investigation, they have been out with their cameras and their tape measures. The investigators have followed. They've been on the case for a long time. It's legitimate. They just won't budge. They took the money to. They're required to put X amount of handicapped units before they can take HUD money. That's part of the deal when you take HUD money. And part of it also is that money is there to provide the reasonable accommodations that the individual handicapped people need. Different handicaps we have different needs. Some could be deaf and they need things for, you know, some could be blind, some could be various needs. And they have not, I guess what we could say is they're using the money to pay for their lawyers to fight the disease.
Well, there's always Elizabeth Vogel's salary. I mean, we don't want to leave those hardworking Mercy Charities housing bureaucrats without adequate recompense.
Well, I think this is going into the hands of the lawyers to fight doing the right thing rather than just simply do it. Simple, easy changes, inexpensive, they just refuse to do. And I think I'd appeal to anybody in the community who's listening. In fact, I got a letter that I'm planning right now to go out to City Council to see if I can, you know, get their attention on these serious matters that involved the lives of so many. And it's not necessary. Just because you're in a situation where you don't have a lot of money doesn't mean you have to give up quality of life. I mean, we're not talking about the picket fence, the little white picket fence and the apple trees and all that. We're just talking about basic living, just peace and quiet.
We prefer these people basically move to Fresno, I think.
There's good money in
basically.
There's good money in low-income housing. You don't know that. It's a big,
well, particularly for those who provide it. How's the sitting band coming?
How you doing?
That's one of the hosts.
Yeah, speaking of, what's happening with Camp Paradise? Has anyone come up with a different location for them to go to?
No, Camp Paradise continues to fight on, and they continue to be on the river. They're getting the schmooze job from Kennedy and Premack, who are embarrassed because there's so much positive publicity about Camp Paradise, and they look like such idiots in saying that Camp Paradise is degrading the environment when environmental experts are saying they've actually improved the environment, so it's kind of hard for them to show that.
Well, you're not going to get the authorities to agree to this because that's public land. They're not going to agree to this. I could go on to the reasons why they're not going to, but there should be an attempt for relocation. There are so many areas that could be used. There's one that I think of that I believe I wrote some years ago to Mayor Fitzmaurice when he was a councilman or vice mayor at the time.
Just a little council member.
and because he expressed interest at the time in helping people who are homeless, that he communicate with the owners of a property, and off the top of my head, I don't know where the street is. It's at the end of the park. It's one of those, the last block there.
I don't know quite what to say about that, except I know that you did put a lot of work in a year ago, and I'm skipping to another subject, on the Brown Act and the fact that City Council has, both in the Mercy Charities case and others, silenced homeless activists, violated the State Public Open Meetings Act. And you put actually hours and hours in preparing a lawsuit, which this, what's his name, this Norse guy, paid for, filed, but for some reason hasn't moved on the moving papers. What do you make of this?
I think he should do it. Because if you don't follow through to the end, you don't make your point. You don't get through. And that's what these laws are all about for us. That's why we have them. They're a vehicle. They're a tool for us to be heard. Unfortunately, these days, anytime you want to be heard on something, it's got to be in court. From down to the most minute things, people just don't cooperate anymore. I guess things have become too complicated. But, you know, what you talked about, it's illegal for a good reason. And I just thought about that a week or so ago because there was an article in the paper about, in the Bay Area, they did some closed session meetings and they ousted a couple of members of their board because happened to be two members who were for an environmental project, and so they ousted them. And they went in there and they said, no, you know, you can't do this.
And the public needs the protection of real open meetings. Now, we'll see if we can... Yeah.
Of course. And, you know, everybody needs guidance. Everybody.
Right. Even Tim Fitzmaurice.
All of us. I think he welcomes it. I think all of the council members in their heart welcome it. I only would hope that there were more of a creative input to our council members so that there would be results in the areas that we need.
Hope springs eternal, Eleanor.
Well, yeah, I'm praying.
Gotta go.
I'm praying for people with the energy and the ideas and the ability to convey them so that things can be... There's so much that can be done.
I noticed here at the farmer's market there are no drums today. Very few people on the sidewalk. Nobody's sitting. There are no little tables along the side as there used to be.
Oh, yeah.
There's one guy selling the People's World, the Communist Party Weekly, and I guess another woman with flyers. But it looks like they have successfully quashed the free speech scene here. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, but they haven't quashed the cigarettes, unfortunately.
Ah, well, there you are. Well, maybe next week they'll work on the cigarettes. First get rid of the people, then get rid of the cigarettes.
Well, I'd rather get rid of the cigarettes first.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Thank you, Eleanor.
My God, let me hear what I said.
Talking to that commie dog.
That's a beauty. I don't call me a commie dog.
Well, you are wearing a Free Mumi Abu Jamal
button. I'm a member of the pink block, man.
Pink
don't
block.
You like pink?
You're a pinko,
man.
Want
to see my pink? No.
I'd like, show me the pink, baby.
I'm going to see my pink.
Okay, can't see the pink. You got the People's Weekly World here. As I was saying a moment ago, there don't seem to be any... They've turned the farmer's market into this middle-class hoodah-doodah.
Yeah, I just met this young woman named Holly, and she couldn't understand what it was about. Why would they keep... Because the police have come by 3 times, and I've only been here about 10 minutes. But I keep turning around acting like I'm not doing anything, so they haven't talked to me yet.
Well, I'm
Sleuthy Judy.
I'm going to file a complaint about you right now.
She couldn't figure out what it was, and I said, well, it's Mussoliniville. She goes, why are they so upset about people coming around, like Earth First? And I go, well, it's Mussoliniville. Don't you know that they're on the run? I don't know.
I'm just trying to calm people down and shut them up. Don't you understand? Well, we're talking to those Earth First criminal dogs with their voter registration forms. How are the police treating you all today?
I haven't seen them yet.
Have they registered to vote? I mean, certainly the police need to vote.
I just arrived here.
Now, who's been here for a while?
I have, sir.
I notice a complete paucity of any of those scumbaggy hippie types hanging out. Is that because finally the police have moved in and given our town the clean sweep that it so richly needs?
I think these aren't the droids you were looking for. It's been working quite well. The hippies have mediated their own ground off to one side, and the market and their capital.
Separate but equal.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you get like 0.0% of the space, and they wall you off with this mesh, this green and orange mesh. The table is normally set up in here or not here. Normally you get, you know, 10 or 15, well, 5 or 10 little tables up and down here. But I see that you are the only table, and I've seen two people giving out People's Weekly Worlds. What is your name, sir?
My name is Rabbi.
And...
Bye.
Rabbi or Rabbi?
Rabbi.
Rabbi. Now, that's an honest ring to it. Your eyes look okay. Are you a robber? No, just a rabbi.
Just a rabbi.
So, I see there's actually some minor drumming going on over here, kind of hidden away on this little, like, right around this one tree. Any other comments about what's happening here today?
There's a sitar sighting. There's a couple of tabla players that been circulating the area. I think it might be a little drum jam, a little happiness, merrymaking, some good things happening. We have our own marketplace in the corner side.
Thank you. Blue Radio wants to know, how are the police treating all of you?
Horribly. Oh my God, we had this woman threaten to kill us right in front of a police officer, and he said he didn't hear her say anything.
Go to sleep, go to jail.
They've been totally, they've been so mean to us.
We're just one guy, like, we were just walking down the street, and he just, like, starts talking to us. Actually, no, we weren't walking, we were sitting, he was walking.
A group of people was in front of Longs a day or two later.
He starts talking to us and, like, telling us off for something, and,
seriously,
like, he wouldn't
shut up. So many cops have given us crap just for being downtown Santa Cruz, just for being there. They'll tell us to move, they'll tell us not to sit against the wall, they'll tell us we're with too many
people.
You can't sit in groups of two or more people.
And they,
and we had this one cop say he was going to arrest us for harassing minors just because we were trying to have a good time and talking kind of funny and asking for our three-legged dog.
It's a joke.
Y'all under arrest. No, just kidding.
It's like, what'd you guys get in trouble for? Sitting up against a building?
Yeah, we were sitting against the wall and we got in trouble for that. We've gotten, I don't know, cops just harass people downtown for any reason they can.
Yeah, totally.
It's about 5:15, we're outside Long's talking to a group, it looks like, of six folks. Where are your gang colors?
Yeah, good question.
We're all wearing red and blue. Today.
Anybody?
I forgot that big butcher knife I had in my pocket.
My police officer.
Did anybody get any curfew tickets in the last year, by the way?
No, we got let off. Actually, we did get let off by a police officer for curfew.
But it was already 4:30.
It was 4:30.
He almost got arrested yesterday for trying to go to the bathroom on a tree.
Down off a trail, like where no one could see me.
It's a toilet tree, man. It's a toilet tree.
You gotta go. That's...
Yeah, it's just going to the bathroom, man.
I don't know what time curfew is. They told us, we asked them what time can we be out in the morning. They're all 7, 8, 9, so we're not allowed to go to school. that was so great.
You can't sleep in this town. Me and my friend live in our car, and there's not even anywhere where you can park and sleep without getting a ticket for it. So
you're forming a new civil rights organization for young people, right?
Yeah!
All right, so now we're going to... So here we are in front of the Sentinel. It's about 5:20. And we are here checking out a large stand, Activate America publication cart, and we have a man doing some singing with some taking up about 15 by 3 feet with a sort of a figure of a person, stuffed figure on the ground looking, he's either sleeping or dead, I'm not sure which. It says, next week, free lemonade, the purchase of Active America publication.
5 o'clock in the morning.
And there we have it. You want to be interviewed, big guy?
When I roll over to find out.
See you later. So I'm out of here. Okay, it's about 20 to 9. We're in front of the Santa Cruz Sentinel, and there's a pooch here. What's the name of this pooch?
This is Canine Lulabelle.
Canine
Lulabelle.
And you are?
I'm Nate Nepenthe with Activate America.
So we got Nate and Canine here. You've been here since 1 o'clock?
1 o'clock this afternoon. We broke the World Guinness Book of Records for the second time. I broke it originally in 1996 as a political prisoner back in Motor City.
And you're engaging in a political protest here?
It's a political protest, for sure. I believe that this paper is guilty of media bias, media censorship. It's suppressing the truth from the citizens of this county.
And I believe the Activate America protest is went on every day last week during the daylight hours during the afternoon, sometimes by singing, sometimes by reading the, not the Declaration of Independence, but the Star-Spangled Banner, and singing or whistling the Star-Spangled Banner. At one point, the protester was threatened with arrest if he continued to whistle. We're not talking about a wolf whistle, but sort of a feeble whistle. But some people were offended by that. The man is, shall we say, very outspoken and sometimes rather incoherent and paranoid seeming to me. On the other hand, there are a lot of other people who have concerns about the Sentinel who like to mutter them to each other but never bring them out on the street. So I think it's important to give credit to people, even those who perhaps go a bit over the edge, who actually put their feet where their mouth are. Sometimes they put their feet in their mouth, but that's another story. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your host, Robert Norris. This is a Sunday free speech show on Free Radio Santa Cruz. It goes until 1:30. And for those of you who tuned in to hear the discussion of Camp Paradise from the perspective of environmentalist Patricia Matichek, we're still hoping she'll make it to the studio. And actually, our hope is beginning to sag, so I think we're going to fairly shortly play a recorded interview that I had with her a night before last, which she was quite articulate and expressed a number of views which are sure to excite, I think, some strong responses. The River Task Force on which she sits, apparently there was some heat at the last meeting, which I guess was last Monday, if I have that right, and it was attended by some people who were in favor of Camp Paradise, Carl Wilson, local activist, Sarah Phelan, local reporter, and Khalil, a local environmental expert who has been hired on the cheap by Camp Paradise to prepare a plan for the city, an environmental plan, so that Camp Paradise folks can not only show that they're not degrading the environment, but offer to upgrade other environments around the town. And they showed up at that meeting, and apparently there was a couple of members of the task force who were particularly upset that the city was not enforcing the camping ordinance in the most vigorous fashion at Camp Paradise, though they have issued over 20 tickets there for $54 each, done regular harassments and threats to remove campers, made public statements that put people there in fear of their property and their security should they continue to remain there, not to mention their liberty. So I'm not quite sure. I guess the fact that they haven't moved in and completely demolished the camp and maybe seeded the area with hypodermic needles, like the ones that were thrown out by the camp and collected in large garbage bags and disposed of, maybe that's what's... I'm being facetious. I'm sure that that specifically is not bothering the task force, but the task force folks are claiming that the use of a porta-potty near the river, or possibly urinating near the river and defecating into a hole, is also causing environmental degradation, as well as other, I guess, effluvium from a campsite. Of course, I guess my initial reaction when I heard this was, I'm perfectly open to, and I think Camp Paradise people are open to considering any legitimate concerns here, and some of these sound legitimate, but it's often the campers, poor low-income campers, get all kinds of hassle, but the vast amount of waste and degradation that goes on with something like the Seaside Company and the despoiling of the environment that happens at the mouth of the river, though it does get some attention, doesn't seem to evoke the level of shrillness that campers do in the minds of folks. There should be a lawsuit that the city should be pursuing against the Seaside Company for its occupation of the tidelands. And actually, I believe that Patricia Matichek agrees with me there. But we don't see high-profile protests on that subject by this commission that I've heard of yet, although perhaps I'm not as much in touch with it as I should be. And if anyone's out there who is more knowledgeable, I'd like to know. I tried to get the documents, the critical letter of this woman, but there's sort of a conspiracy of secrecy going on here, even though these are public documents. It's kind of hard to get them. I wasn't able to get to the actual public offices, and individuals who had them would not share them with me, so that I can't broadcast them to you. But perhaps somebody else out there has the critical documents and will be able to read them. I was hoping that Patricia Matichek would be able to bring them into the studio. I heard the letter. I think I even saw it, and it is available, I believe, at the city clerk's office or at possibly Parks and Rec. Whoever keeps the records for the River Restoration Task Force, and there's a sort of a lament that these dirty campers are causing all kinds of troubles, and it's sort of reeking with stereotypes as far as I'm concerned. Though again, there are also legitimate concerns in there as well, and I'm hoping we can get down to specifics, which is always difficult if you don't have the specific document in front of you. So I'm hoping that maybe on Monday I'll be able to get a copy. Bring it in on Thursday, perhaps. Also Monday, according to Patricia Matichek, a subcommittee of this task force is meeting to draft a letter around the Camp Paradise issue officially. And when I asked her when that meeting was and where, she declined to tell me where. Maybe she didn't know. I think she told me when, 7 o'clock or 5 o'clock, something like that. But she said she didn't know if it was open. And immediately my ears perked up, because when I hear that meetings by task forces aren't open, then I suddenly start seeing red and start snorting and growling and getting upset, because task forces are empowered by the city council to discuss and debate issues of public policy, and they have no business closing down their meetings. In fact, I get suspicious when they do. City council, of course, is a master at closing its meetings down. They made major decisions about where all the affordable housing money for the next 5 years or beyond is going to be going to. Mark Premack says it's, 10 years or 15 years or 18 years. I'm not sure what it is. in the Dolphin Lee Project. So these decisions, as far as I can see, were mainly made in closed sessions in the last 6 months, and then finally brought forward for a quick rubber stamping in an open session, which is no way to pursue public policy and is a fundamental violation of the democratic process and corruption of the democratic process. It's government by secrecy. It's kind of an oligopoly, a government by a small kind of clique of people, which is, of course, what we have here in Santa Cruz. And I don't like seeing that. And that's the whole purpose of a lot of what I do with my writing and on the air, is to see that come to an end and see the broader community have some power and some real input into this situation. So while we're trying to get the tapes all put together here, step back a step again to this fine NASNA conference that I was able to make my way to and do so much recording at. NASNA is the North American Street Newspaper Association, and I went up there in July, 26th or so, I believe it was, and had lots of interesting interviews with folks from street newspapers throughout the country, in fact, throughout the continent, Canada and U.S., about how things were in their various cities. And I'm going to play a few of these interviews now, and I invite you to hang with me for a few minutes, and then we'll be going into this Back to the Camp Paradise matter or whatever else comes up. And remember, you can always call in and bring up your own issues, 427-3772. One thing people have been wondering about, and I'm going to say this again until I get some correction from Larry Templeton, the co-founder of Camp Paradise, or someone else. I confirmed with attorney Paul Sanford last night, who still, as I understand it, is attorney of record in some matters for Camp Paradise, and he agreed that there was no done deal at all. No property has been promised. No nonprofit cover has been promised. There was supposedly a proposal. There was a proposal of a sort made on Voices from the Village that an idea was raised that someone, a nonprofit such as the Land Trust, Tom Shaver, I believe, brought forward this idea, could cover a kind of lease property such as the Camp Paradise site from the city, and then that they could lease it back to Camp Paradise residents who would pay for it and then be its stewards and take care of it and so forth and live there. And that whole process was optimistically pursued last Tuesday at a meeting at Barrios Unidos with Scott Kennedy, Mark Premack, and others, Paul Sanford, Dan Alper, Larry Templeton. And some people came away with one picture and some people came away with another, but the picture I'm getting, and I wasn't there, but by having talked to at least three of the participants directly, is that there was no deal, four of the participants, I'm sorry, I've talked to Paul Sanford, Tom Shaver, Carl Wilson, and Larry Templeton. And they, three of them have one idea, and Larry has a more optimistic assessment. But the idea that I came away with was that they're talking about discussing it at a Monday meeting, that's tomorrow, of the Land Trust, in terms of studying it further. It's being studied. It is not in any way a real offer. There are, Michael Schmidt, who's on the board of directors of the Land Trust, has said that he is concerned that if this were to be done in any kind of, if the Land Trust really wanted to start running campgrounds per se, it might require a complete change in its charter, which would take months to do. It could, however, be done on a temporary basis. There's a lot of discussion of the idea, but most important, no one has offered any land, and the city council has not offered any sanction for this or any offer to do it. Kennedy and Premack are the minority on the city council, and quite frankly, they are an opportunistic minority. They are, they are willing to talk about issues because they're essentially buried in most of the votes. And it doesn't hurt them to speak out on issues, and I'm glad they do, insofar as they're sincere and consistent. The problem is that Kennedy, as I've talked about on the air before, is notoriously anti-homeless, at least has been in the last decade. In his legislation is introduced. He introduced the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law, ask for a dime peacefully after dark, go to jail. Beach flats, giveaways, the Pelton Street Garden Project destruction. I mean, Kennedy is notorious. He just is. And he, it's his proxies that were voted out in the 1998 elections. And how he got in has another story entirely. But there's a question as to whether he is to be believed in his claims of interest and sympathy. And Mark Premack, while he has been outspoken on some issues, has taken a position consistently that essentially homeless people don't have any rights and they should sort of keep a low profile, and that's the best way for them to proceed, and that somehow the camping ban will sort of wither away if everybody just shuts up about it and does nothing, which to me is a kind of utterly preposterous proposal, and I don't know where he got it from, but I know that he has consistently said that and blamed people like me for the continuation of the camping ordinance and the sleeping ban. So this is your classic example of blaming activists and blaming victims for corruption and repressive laws by the city government on behalf of a bigoted mentality, whether it's the merchants or upper middle class people trying to lure SanJose.com money, whatever you will. So the current situation, as I said, at Camp Paradise, as far as I can see, and again, I encourage folks from Camp Paradise to call in and give me your own perspective, because I don't live there and I do not speak for Camp Paradise. I'm just a friend of Camp Paradise, an observer, and I also am concerned about the interests of the broader homeless community, and do not speak for them either. I speak for myself and what I believe to be right in the situation. But what is true is that large-scale organizing, a week of organizing on the street in front of Borders with, you may remember, several tables and a car with a tent on top of it, produced a lot of pressure on the city council, a lot of names and addresses, and there's still volunteers are still really seriously needed to get those names and addresses entered, and I should say names and emails and phone numbers entered in so that further organizing could be done. And now is not the time to stop organizing and believe that everything is done or finished. I think it's important for people to know that that's not the situation. Things are not in any way done, and the police could move in tomorrow and move the campground out. There's no guarantees whatsoever that that won't happen, given the first excuse, whether it's a heavy rain or some incident, or the city manager gets up on the wrong side of bed, whatever it is. The city council isn't around. They haven't held any emergency or special sessions. It isn't on their agenda. And there's no indication from anybody that anything else is happening. Now, if anybody has new information that would lead me to, or lead us to believe otherwise, you know, give us some more information that would be more optimistic, I'd like to hear it. In the meantime, I encourage people to start organizing for the kinds of protests that will deter the city from essentially stripping a self-supporting, clean and sober group of homeless people of their stewardship of the property that is essentially public property that they're on, that they've actually made more accessible to the public. And I think that is to be done by several means. There's a group called JUST, which is just beginning to organize. JUST, join us, sleep together tonight. It's concerned with a tent city type reaction, perhaps. We're looking at different alternatives, but the one currently under preparation is tent city, so that if if Camp Paradise is seized and destroyed, or if there's some other massive attack on homeless people in another part of the city, and it's, of course, a constant low-grade, low-intensity warfare against the homeless, a tent city will rise at City Hall, such as they have in Portland, Oregon, where it's called Dignity Village and has been going on for 8 months illegally but successfully, or in Seattle, where it's called SHARE, and it's again been going on for over a year illegally but successfully, just like Free Radio has been going on illegally but successfully for 6 years now. Then the prospect of having a tent city supported by a lot of folks in houses who understand the moral rights and wrongs, and also just the survival rights and wrongs of this issue, not to mention the common sense rights and wrongs, will be there supporting a tent city. And if the city takes it down, then they'll put up another. Until the city recognizes that it's not meeting its low-income housing requirements, it's denying homeless people basic human right to sleep and to survive on a regular basis as a matter of law, which it seems to me to be fundamentally unconstitutional, regardless of what lower courts may say about it, a violation of the UN Charter, a violation of basic religious doctrines, no matter what religion you belong to, and not to mention a violation of the spirit of Santa Cruz here, that a lot of us, the kind of community spirit we really have here, where we're trying to see inclusion, not exclusion. So I think we need to prepare a civil disobedient response to any premature police move to destroy Camp Paradise or move on other camps in a significant way when there is no other shelter available, as there isn't. There's 39 spaces in the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program that are all taken up every night. And there are bunches of tickets that are going to court. And statements by Kennedy that he'll dispose of the tickets if people pick up two bags of trash, which may or may not have been made. I wasn't there when they were made. I'm told that some such statements were made, or something he can't. That can be done that way, because it's a form of selective enforcement of the law. saying, oh, some people will be nice to, but the rest get to have their rights taken away. I mean, there's real questions about how to proceed there. I think those tickets should all be dropped. There's no question about it. They should be dropped because everybody outside on August 3rd had to be. There was a necessity there. People had no shelter to go to. And for the city to claim that it can criminalize people for doing what they need to do at night is yuppie nonsense and a form of stupidity and cruelty that I think the larger part of the community recognizes without a lot of deep analysis. So that's what we have to prepare for, because unfortunately the city council doesn't recognize it. The city council listens to a different tune, dances to a different piper, and is unfortunately, it seems to be living in a different world than most of us. And just unfortunately their laws affect our world. So I would encourage people to give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you want to be a part of this JUST organization, and to look for the table on the mall, which will probably be returning somewhere near Borders in the next few days. Again, not a Camp Paradise table per se. I think Camp Paradise is doing well. They're continuing to put forward new initiatives, like the recent porta potty that they put up there and paid for, I imagine, when the city has been playing, you know, hide and seek on this issue. Fitzmaurice hides in his office one day. Christopher Crone hides the next day. They don't seem to be willing to address these issues directly or honestly, even after in public they've claimed they're going to put out restroom porta potty and dumpster facilities. That was as far back as February 1999 when the task force on bathrooms was established by the city council. So I'm glad that Camp Paradise is doing its own thing, and it's good that it is. And we will also be, you know, if there are concerns if you have about Camp Paradise, whether it's environmental concerns or internal concerns, if people from Camp Paradise who've had their disputes with the leadership wish to talk about those issues, and I'm sure the leadership of Camp Paradise will be happy to engage in discussions around that too, because I think that the process of open discussion is the way to scotch rumor and to deal with the problem of, you know, false information being spread by word of mouth, whether it's too optimistic information or too pessimistic, you know. And of course, I just have my view. I'm giving my position. It's my position. I'm not speaking for anybody else. And I encourage you to speak for yourself and give a call in here and talk. If you've got stuff you want to say, the phone number here is 427-3772, 427-3772. Lines are open. And I will pause to hem and haw for a bit to see if anybody wants to call in. And I'm going to put on a little bit of, as I was saying, some highlights from the North American Street Newspaper Association. And then after that, hopefully, we'll get into some more of Camp Paradise.
Tina Loren from the National Coalition for the Homeless.
What has the National Coalition been doing except garnering grants?
Well, we have a lot of fun, and
that's for sure. You flew out here. Whoopee!
Occasionally, we do hill visits, go up on the hill and try and get our issues heard by the congressmen and women.
What happens when homeless people try to sleep in your offices at night?
Oh, that's highly welcomed.
Really?
Yeah, actually. Well, Michael Stoops is one of the long-term employees there, and Michael's second home, or basically first home, is in the office, so he's...
How long have you been with the group?
6 months. Just 6 months, so I'm still a novice.
Well, as a novice, well, let me ask you this. In 1985, 86 actually, Mitch Snyder of the Community for Creative Nonviolence actually began a campaign to end the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara. And they did a nationwide campaign, brought people around, had organizers working on that. Has the National Coalition done anything like that you know of in the last 5 years that would make those of us who regard it as an ossified bureaucracy want to have anything to do with it?
Not that I know of, but definitely ask Michael.
Michael is a nice guy.
Yeah, he is. And he's the expert on that, on the history of what NCH has been doing, so... Yeah, I'm still garnering my way around the office and trying to figure out where the copy machine is.
Just a newcomer. And what's happening in Washington around homeless civil rights?
Well, at the moment, we've met with some congresspeople who are trying to push through the hate crimes legislation, but they're not that receptive to putting people experiencing homelessness on the language of the laws. So we are trying to at least figure out what avenues that we can take to get our issue heard on the Hill. And we've met with...
Specify the issue again?
people experiencing homelessness, who experience violence, violent acts.
Isn't it natural to feel kind of hatred and violence toward homeless people? I mean, isn't that the kind of thing that makes us feel we are a racially pure and healthy society?
Yeah, maybe in certain sections of society, but I think here
it... Wasn't it the fear... I'm sorry, wasn't it President Bush who said so notably... Well, actually, I don't recall what he said on this issue, but so how far is the hate crimes legislation gone?
Well, the Senate bill was... There was supposed to be action on it yesterday. I didn't call back to the office to see if anything happened with it, but they... But our issue is not at all on their agenda, so we're trying to get it on there, and hopefully for future bills.
Are you involved at all in city politics in Washington?
There's a section of the staff that's really involved in it.
You're out here with 17 associates, or no?
I'm here with three associates, yeah. And one of them, Lisa Davis, who's a longtime resident of D.C. She's very involved in D.C. politics.
Anybody from the National Law Center for Homelessness and Poverty here?
That I'm not sure. I'm not sure if anybody came here. I hope so, but...
I doubt it, but who knows?
And who are you?
I'm Robert from Santa Cruz.
Okay.
Of HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
And what do you guys do?
We just turn out little broadsides and make ourselves a nuisance to the city council.
Okay, so it's an advocacy or policy group, or do you do direct service to?
Only insofar as we harass the politicians. Some regard that as a service. Others suggest it's a disservice.
No, that's a definite service. That's a definite service.
And again, your name is?
Tina Loren.
It's the third time, folks. Thank you, Tina.
Thanks.
We have a local yokel here who's chowing down on the food. What do you think?
Pardon?
Any comments on the San Francisco scene?
Oh, well.
This is for Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's just, there's a lot of problem with homelessness. Food's great. Plenty of food, but it takes forever to get around town, you know, and there's...
You yourself are outside?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been bouncing in and out of hotels for about 3 years, so...
Your name is? Anomalous.
Yeah, Anonymous.
Thank you.
What's happening in Boston?
We're talking to Executive Director...
Tchaikovsky.
Tchaikovsky, thank you. Spelled differently than the composer, I know, as everybody does, no doubt. You're with Spirit Change in Boston, probably one of the oldest and certainly one of the most frequently published street newspapers. What's happening with Spirit Change?
We just redesigned the way the Spirit Change looks, and actually we had a meeting this winter where we decided to really refocus all of our energy, our organizational energy, into making Spirit Change the best paper we could possibly make it, with the most vendors that we could possibly get, and begin going statewide with it rather than just being a Boston and Cambridge-based paper. But as far as the political climate in Massachusetts and Boston, we consider ourselves really, really lucky. Probably one of the most liberal places, and homeless people are probably treated the best in that area than they are anywhere else in the country.
You're allowed to sleep in your vehicle without being arrested, for example, in Boston.
Yeah, I mean, you're allowed to do just about anything, and be allowed to do that, just be able to be in Boston. So
you sleep in a park, they won't drag you away.
Not as long as it's a public park. If
really, at night?
Yep.
That is unusual.
Yeah, it is. Well, there was a Supreme Court decision a few years ago that sort of set the tone for all...
Massachusetts Supreme Court.
Massachusetts Supreme Court, yes. So we don't have too many problems, even with our vendors.
Well, there's no need to talk to you any further.
That's true. We're a good city.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And who is this?
My name's Paula Matthew. I'm from Chicago. I work formerly with Streetwise. Now I'm with the Journal of Ordinary Thought.
That's that former cheesy, large, commercial, wanna-be-a-homeless paper, but is pretending to run around and do other things.
Well, if it means anything, I was fired from there, so I take that as a badge of honor.
Now, why were you fired?
Well, it's a complicated story. I did a project, an alternative bus tour of Chicago called Not Your Mama's Bus Tour, where the vendors... We actually sold tickets, $25 a ticket, and people wrote stories about their own life, and we did this theatrical bus tour around the city. It was a great success, but in doing it, I brought in another organization to help us out, the Journal of Ordinary Thought, which was the writing group was already a member of this organization, but I was considered of having breached the confidentiality of the organization by partnering with
disgraceful.
Yeah, with this other nonprofit. So even though the project was an incredible success, we got positive reviews in every daily paper. It sold out. It was a good. The vendors got paid a wage they negotiated. It was a wonderful success, but because of that, I was fired after the project ended. So now I'm continuing to work with the Journal of Ordinary Thought, which
is... You have a journal with you?
Yeah, they're across the street. And it's a different kind of thing. It's not sold, but it's a vehicle of kind of expression. Well, and I'm moving to Boston next week, so it'll be exciting. But the Journal of Ordinary Thought is a... We run writing groups in low and no income areas of Chicago, and people write about their daily life. The motto is every person is a philosopher, and that's the motto of the organization. And so people engage in these writing groups weekly, and then six times a year we put out this Journal of Ordinary Thought that compiles writing and photographs of the neighborhoods, people writing about kind of the gentrification of their neighborhoods, other kind of things going on. And so that's where I've been working.
Chicago is... On a scale of 1 to 10, how bad in terms of major urban areas for homeless people?
Well, I think the gentrification is really, I don't know comparatively. I mean, like everyone says here in San Francisco, there's just tons of homeless people. There's a lot of repression of homeless people in Chicago. So I think that puts it, you know, higher, definitely higher than 5. And the public spaces in Chicago are disappearing. There's like, you know, parks, there's no public benches and restrooms and things for people. It's just very hard in that respect more and more. And the city's becoming this tourist destination and everything is kind of Disneyfied and cleaned up with flower pots. And,
yeah. And where do the homeless go in the winter in Chicago?
Well, they used to go to Lower Wacker Drive, which we have a two-layered street in the city where, you know, the underneath is kind of heated by steam tunnels. But the mayor kind of chased people out of there who had been living there. You know, there are some shelters. There's Union Station. Actually, someone who would even know more is Carrie Leiterson. Is still at Streetwise. She's a reporter at Streetwise, so she can...
Are you in Streetwise on good terms?
No.
Well, good. I'm a little healthy country. How about you and Sherry, what's her name? The woman you just spoke of?
Oh, she's great. She's head of... The employees have unionized trying to kind of deal with the difficulty of management, so... They're in labor negotiations right now, and so I was very supportive of their efforts and gave them any information I had. I mean, you know, the vendors I worked with at Streetwise, I had, you know, a very good working relationship with them. It's just a management issue there.
Is the Journal of Ordinary Thought sold on the streets?
No, it's actually sold by subscription, so the people who do the writing don't have to sell it, and it's a different kind of... When the writers, we do a lot of public readings and speakings, and when the writers do that, they're given a stipend, you know, for that. But it's not really seen as an income-generating thing for people. They get the writing workshops, and those are all free and open to the public. And so it's sort of just a self-sustaining thing rather than a...
Your name again is?
Paula Matthew, M-A-T-H-I-E-U.
Thank you, Paula. I'm Robert. Can't actually walk in the building of Streetwise?
Well, I don't really know, but my keys were taken away on my last day, and I was asked to leave the building. And
because of your criminal behavior.
Right.
Well, here we are, America's 10 most wanted. Thank you, Paula. What's the update from L.A., and who are you, anyway?
My name is Rick Matley. I'm with the Los Angeles Community Action Network. I'm also the editor of their newsletter, The Community Connection.
And is it posing as a street newspaper or no?
Well, it aspires to be a street newspaper.
Oh.
It's in its sort of embryonic stages. I mean, it's being born.
I can show you a copy.
Cool. We have here, of course, the editor of the notorious, what is it? Is it called Still Making Change?
It's Still Making Change, even though it's mostly treading water.
I see. Treading Water, the new name. I like it. It's even better. So Making Change, you're the one that fought the big issues to a standstill. Or did you sell out to the big issue? What happened then?
I have fought them, and my sword still is stained with the blood of the past, and I'm standing strong.
Tim Harris isn't even showing his face at this conference, I understand.
And this is a conversation with Jennifer Wagoner at the NASNA conference, the editor of the street newspaper Making Change from Santa Monica in Los Angeles area, where a corporate homeless paper, actually using homeless vendors and the issue of homelessness to make its own, well, to make money its own way. It's not really for-profit paper, but it seems to be have a sort of a corporate mentality and uses homeless people to sell its paper so it can then give back money to different projects. It's a different kind of paper that's evoked a lot of controversy. Again, it's called The Big Issue, and it's out of London. And there was a lot of concern that The Big Issue would kind of nose out smaller papers, and in fact, it's been the case that local independent homeless newspapers have not developed in areas where The Big Issue has been that I know of, and that the various Big Issue editors I talked to at this conference know of. But this gets a little arcane, and I did a lot of struggling around this issue 3 or 4 years ago, hoping that NASNA would support small newspapers. NASNA did not. It was more interested in getting The Big Issue involved, although The Big Issue never did eventually get involved because of all the controversy, but it's still sort of hovering on the edges, trying to get a foothold in the U.S., operating through other newspapers, they're homeless newspapers funded by The Big Issue, and it's a whole kind of can of worms, the subject. But the primary question is, for me, do we want to see advocacy journalism concerned with homeless civil rights issues? Do we want to see the homeless used as a selling point by a large vanilla corporate kind of mentality that doesn't involve homeless people in its decision-making and that essentially uses the issue of homelessness to promote itself? And that was the question for me. And that was, but not the question for a lot of people at the NASNA conference. And there were a lot of good and interesting people there, and we'll probably be hearing some more excerpts from the NASNA conference. But I think right now what we should do is listen to a little of Dan Hopkins on the street here in Santa Cruz, and then possibly turn to the promised Patricia Matichek. I just checked my messages, and there was one message this morning which gave me the bad news, that Patricia could not make it because she has a shopping engagement. She has to help somebody else do some shopping. I think it's maybe an elderly person she's helping out. Not sure. She says she's happy to come back another time and do it, but she already warned me this might be a problem. So I don't think she's ducking the issue. And you'll be able to hear her recorded analysis of this whole thing. And I'm hoping that folks can call in and discuss the issues raised anyway.
So it's about 6:20 in front of Borders here. Crowds are getting thicker on this Friday evening of August, 17th, 2001. I'm with Dan Hopkins. Dan, you're unemployed at the moment.
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm hopefully getting unemployment pretty soon, but I'm not sure. I'll find out sometime this week.
And, yeah. Dan, you're a man who's spending a lot of time on the streets. Any comments on how things have been today downtown? I don't see too many police officers around.
No, they haven't been around off and on for the last few weeks, as a matter of fact, but every once in a while they bring in their thugs that used to be on the mall before, you know, the real bad policemen.
And, such as?
Well...
Not naming any names, eh, Dan?
Probably everybody on the streets knows who they are.
I'm noticing all kinds of criminal behavior, like there's a woman with a man with a poodle. I guess it's a woman with a poodle on a leash. I've seen at least two or three dogs walking around here today. Of course, none of the women are dogs. They're all very attractive. But this is a poodle who's a real dog, and not a bad-looking dog at that, I might add.
Yeah.
They probably don't know that they're subject to various fines. Of course, they look a little middle class. Although I do see a sort of a backpack on this one woman. I guess it's a side pack. I don't know what you call that.
Yeah, some kind of side pack. Yeah.
So here we see a clumping of individuals engaging in behavior I would like to be engaging in, actually. So how's it going, folks? Are there any comments for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
No, kicking it in Santa Cruz, man.
No problems?
Yeah, I want to hear some more punk rock.
Well,
Sing it. Let's hear it, man. Come on. You got to make the music,
okay.
Right?
We must have blood. Must have blood. Must have everything we need in our life. We must have blood. Must have blood.
And there you have it. We have on-the-spot punk rock music in front of the Santa Cruz Roasting Company. Are you embarrassed for this poor man?
No, not at all.
She lives with me.
Well, there's a beginning. Well, I have to admit, I noticed the affectionate gestures that you two were engaging, and I wanted to commend you on your boldness.
Oh, no problem. Yeah. Anytime.
I think it adds to the... Yes, the sooner the better.
It adds to country. Country? Finger fucking Sally is a...
And we'll leave that behind. And on the air with us now, calling in, is Chaim, who's just come back from Camp Paradise with a report.
Yeah, I just came... Hold on 1 second here.
Can you turn that radio off, please?
Sorry, Robert. We had a bunch of emails from Camp Paradise, you know, Hotmail.
Mm-hmm.
And so went down there to get some answers, you know, to send people, and asked Donald Dirklod, you know, if there was any, what they need down there, you know, as far as keeping the camp together.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a list of 5 different things, and I thought I'd give you a call, and maybe some of the folks who are listening can come forward.
Mm-hmm.
They need some tarps. I guess they're starting to get ready for the rainy season.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need some tarps. They need some rain gear. They need some garden tools. Apparently, some of their garden tools maybe have been walking off or something. I don't know. But they need some shovels, some garden tools, stuff like that. They need some winter clothing. And finally, they need some first aid stuff. They're sort of running sort of slim on that. And other than that, they're happy. They're having a church service right now. Reverend Jeff is back, and there's a new baby there, Tony, the new baby by the name of Lance, and first baby at Camp Paradise, and the baby's down there now, and it's things are good.
Now, can people come down and kiss the baby if they want?
Well, I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know if they can kiss the baby, but they can certainly look at the baby.
kiss the Barney Stone,
yeah, something like that.
So this religious service, however, is open to the public?
Oh, yeah, the church service is open to the public. Anyone can come down there.
Now, is it true that there is a porta-potty on the trail now?
It's not exactly on the trail. It's when you right off Elker Street, before you come down into the trail, there's the porta-potty's there. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And that's good. The city should have less to complain about then.
Now, have you got any indication that actually there's been any new offers of property for Camp Paradise? Because we've been hearing a lot of very optimistic, hopeful statements about how the problems are solved and all they have to do is kind of work out the details.
Well, I'll tell you, according to to Donald Dirklod,
yeah.
One of the emails that we got was from the writer from the Chronicle, Maria Guire.
Uh-oh.
And she wanted to know what, you know, if anything was new. And Donald's answer to her is that, I'll quote it here. He says, "We're waiting for the city's response and what kind of land they're going to give us."
Well, that's pretty optimistic.
I think that's very optimistic.
The city has made no offer to give any land.
Well,
Kennedy has talked about being willing to facilitate a nonprofit's oversight of land if they get it from somewhere, but I don't think he's offered them any land.
Well, this is what Donald says. I don't know the insides.
Right. Well, there could be some secret donor here, and that'll be good to hear. Although it doesn't sound like there's a secret donor. It sounds like they're hoping the city will donate land.
Well, yeah, hopefully. But there's let's see, some of the emails that came in today. One was from Jack Tafari.
He's a Dignity Village in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, if there's any help he could give, any type of strategy or so forth, he wants to come forward and, you know, give a hand.
Mm-hmm.
Got another email from Dr. Lee, who emailed from Phelps, Wisconsin, and he has a tent, a huge tent that he wants to give over to the camp.
Are we talking about Dr. Paul Lee?
Dr. Paul Lee, yeah.
Wow, Paul Lee, the famous writer of The Quality of Mercy, a local book about Santa Cruz homelessness.
Yeah, he has a huge tent. I guess he's coming back to this part of the woods, but right now he's in Wisconsin, and he has a phone number out there, and he has this huge 20-man tent that he wants to deliver.
Excellent.
An interesting little note, some family has been looking for a fellow by the name of Rooster for, about a month or so.
Mm-hmm.
And they sent an email to Camp Paradise, you know, asking them if they knew him. And they knew about four different people by the name of Rooster.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sent out a...
roster of Roosters?
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then they sent out another email with some more information, a man named by the name of Howard LaPierre, who's 5 feet tall and with blonde hair. And thank goodness some of the campers knew him, and they're going to try to get a hold of him to get him in contact with his family.
So Camp Paradise is not only serving as environmental trash men and cleaning up the area, but they're also sort of the lost and found of the city.
Well, I guess they know all the homeless, and apparently Rooster is one of them, and the family will be really, you know, happy to hear that their loved one has been found, and maybe we get them back together again.
Mm-hmm.
Another man by the name of Daniel Garcia sent an email that he has a room for rent, if anyone is interested, in Modesto, California.
Yeah, his brother, I believe, was killed by police in San Jose or San Francisco.
That's what I understand.
Yeah.
That's what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, you know, a room for rent in Modesto. I know a lot of the homeless folks are sort of like moving and trying to find new places to live. And so a person's got a, you know, room for rent in Modesto. Mm-hmm. And let's see, one more interesting email was from Kara Lamb. Kara Lamb is a friend of Camp Paradise, and she's been trying to find, you know, realtors or land, she found a realtor named Sheila Sutphin, who, you know, could be helpful to the camp in finding a piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, a few other people, Karen Gillette.
She's the former head of the Homeless Services Center.
Karen Gillette, sent an email, you know, if they need any help with storage or stuff like that, she might be helpful. And anyway, people are really, you know, they're still sending in emails, and they're very, very supportive of the camp, and it's really, you know, it's really a good thing to hear, and that people still care.
And it's good that you're reporting it, you know, for the rest of us to hear as well, Chaim.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, I went down there to camp just to get some answers, you know, for, you know, what to email back to these folks, and yeah, I mean, the camp is happy. They seem to be pretty together. You know, their church services today, and new baby down there. There might be here's something interesting. There might be a wedding down there. I know if it'll be at Camp Paradise, but there's a couple down there who has their, you know, all their papers to get married, and they were looking for a minister to marry them.
Doug and Marilyn, is it?
I'm not sure of the names.
There was a couple that called me that asked if they wanted you to marry them.
Actually. Oh, well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think the Reverend Jeff is going to do it.
I see. Maybe you could do a joint ceremony. So.
I don't know.
Or a ceremony with joints.
Well, maybe so. I don't know. They're Christian people, and I think the Reverend Jeff is going to be talking to them, and maybe they'll have a wedding down there. It's all very tentative.
Well, I know that the Reverend Jeff also proposed a plan that seemed to have been embraced by the camp about 3 weeks ago, which the camp gave over all its property to the church that Jeff is a part of, in return for which Jeff would be able to use the, I guess it's the Religious Restoration Act of 2000 or some such federal law, to in essence stop the city from enforcing the camping ordinance there unless it could show, A, that it had a, I don't know whether it's a strong it's not just a rational governmental purpose, it's a persuasive or strong governmental purpose, as well as to show that was the least restrictive means of doing it, the camping ordinance.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's up with that.
He was going to bring some documents, but then he had some sort of a heart attack or a stroke or something.
I don't think it was a heart attack or a stroke. He's having some, you know, some difficulties, but he's here today. He's down there, and he was in the hospital, I guess, for 5 days or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he seems to be feeling a little bit better, and he was able to make the trip with his wife and a few other people from his group, and they're having a church service down there, and that's good.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as that, you know, what you're this other thing, I'm not. You'd have to speak to him about it. I'm really not sure.
And finally, there's sometimes in camps in Santa Cruz, homeless camps, it's sort of a rough-hewn mentality. Often that kind of this is how it is. And sometimes when you get a strong male leader, sometimes women who are involved in that situation, if it's a large group, feel like they don't get their voices out. Do you sense that that's a problem in Camp Paradise?
No, I don't sense it's a problem. I think Pamela and Chris and a few other of the women, Kay especially. I think they get their words in. I don't feel that's a situation. I mean, when it comes to like problems, like for example, like, you know, the drug deals and all this, or or something. You know, the men, you know, the men are in the front trying to, you know, get it out of there. But as far as like decisions going on in the camp, I think it's run by council, and I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's a problem.
Now, is it true that the police actually directed 13 people to come one night last week, or was that sort of a bogus rumor?
I didn't hear anything about that. Oh, I didn't hear anything about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was it Caltrans? They came down there this morning to clean up the place,
mm-hmm.
and they had nothing to do, and so they just dropped some garbage bags off and left. There were four guys, you know, coming down there, you know, with bags and to pick up garbage, and there was no garbage for them to pick up. So they asked the campers, "Well, yeah."
Well, that seems to me to be another complaint against Camp Paradis, that they're putting poor Caltrans workers out of work.
Well, they didn't seem to mind. Mm-hmm. They didn't seem to mind that they had nothing to pick up, and they were very, you know. They were sort of surprised, and they left a bunch of garbage, you know, big orange garbage bags with the campers. It doesn't seem to be they didn't seem to care that much, frankly. It didn't look like anybody was in tears, you know, having to, you know, leave the camp, like, you know, and not being able to pick up any trash. They didn't seem to be bothered too much.
I see. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
We're talking with Chaim Levin, who's been kind of a you're a homeless activist who's been, you were high profile back in Baltimore about 6-8 months ago.
Yeah.
What do you hear from Baltimore, where you were serving food with the homeless in front of City Hall?
Well, I spoke with a couple of my friends back in Baltimore, I guess about 2 weeks ago, and they're still feeding right in front of City Hall every day.
And no hassles from the city?
No hassles. There's still an injunction on them, but the city hasn't acted on it, and they won't. The city just won't act on it because
mm-hmm.
they're afraid of the press and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're still doing the feeding, and that's still going on. It's still a good thing. Anyway, I'm going to say goodbye now. And once again, let me just give this list off again if people didn't hear it, because
mm-hmm.
it's sort of important. I think it's worth repeating.
Mm-hmm.
The camp could use some tarps, rain gear, shovels, garden tools, winter clothing, and some first aid equipment. And they would, you know, be obliged if, you know, if somebody could come forward.
And you can bring that down by going to Ocean Street to Denny's, down Denny's path on Felker Street to
right.
the right to the little dirt path off the end near the river that you just take under the bridge and then go 500 yards upriver.
There you go.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks. Take care, Robert.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And looks like that could be the update from Camp Paradis, though we don't have call waiting here in the studio, so other people may be waiting to call in. If you've been waiting to call in, it's time to do it. 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, here at 96.3 FM. Give us a call.
I'm taking the needle off of the wreck and shoving it into my arm. Wherever I feel life is coming on too strong. They left me in the clinic full of cynical and motherfucking bureaucrats. And other kind of dingbats are living on the tracks, but the tracks in my arm. Said it all depends on which side the tracks you're on. So telling me what to wear and telling me cut my hair and trying to convince me that they really, really care about my health and about my wealth. But still they built the stealth, cause everybody's just looking out for that. So then I ask him, can I have a clean needle? He say, hell no. That's illegal, it's a crime. Yeah. To be broke in America, see, it's a crime. To be black in America, come on, y'all. Brothers in the poorhouse who can't afford more house. Politicians nervous, it's the only free service they provide. You wanna go inside, there's a hot meal waiting for a deal. We can score you on a bed for a night or two, or three or 4 months. They say they locking us up in a cell to protect us from ourselves. It smells like they got another plan.
On the line with caller Carl. Hi, Carl.
Hi. I'm somebody who lives very close to Camp Paradis, and I've been down there quite a bit. I want to speak about the environmental issue, because one of the things that's done is you'll get a general criticism about the people who camp along the river, and they do this and that and this and that, and you try to bring up the fact that Camp Paradise is a lot cleaner, tremendous, it's a great improvement. And they say, yeah, but still. But when they start saying we should get people off the river, the way the authorities will tend to react to that is they'll go close down Camp Paradise and leave the other. So it's a way of, it's sort of like a bait and switch thing or something like that. In other words, you criticize this broad spectrum of people, but you know that the people who are going to get it are a particular group. So there's a dishonesty here, because they're not going to go after these isolated camps nearly so much as they're going to go after Camp Paradise. They say that they're worried about the river, but their actions are going to impact the part of the river that the homeless are doing the best job at. So this is not honest.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly seems short-sighted. If maybe honestly short-sighted, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I know that we're about to play an interview with Patricia Matichek shortly after we finish mm-hmm. this conversation. I think there's one interview before it, short one. But I think there's also a sort of a mentality. I know at least this is what I noticed with Patricia, that, and you'll I think hear that when you listen to her interview. Her fundamental charge is dealing with the restoring the river to and the river habitat mm-hmm. to a kind of a pristine state. And
yeah.
her primary concern is, I don't think she has hostility toward homeless people per se, although it's hard to tell because stereotypes do tend to creep into the conversation, and you'll see that happening. She talks about, I don't know if she did this on tape, an older woman living near the railroad tracks, not near the river, who was hassled by two drunks. And I said, well, none of us appreciate or have any sympathy for two drunken men hassling an older woman. But, you know, the idea that somehow this means that the solution is to clear homeless people out of town is, it's a prejudiced picture. And it's a kind of a generalization that is unfair to, I'd say, the mass of homeless people.
Yeah, this is true. There's just a very, a lack of making distinctions. You just throw out all this stuff. I was at that meeting of the River Task Force.
Last Monday?
Yeah, and some of the things were said about the homeless there are pretty bad.
In what way? Any specifics?
Well, people come here because it's a soft, easy place to be, and they come here not to work, and they're just these outsiders who are coming here to freeload. And
are they talking about the San Jose, the .com people that come here because it's a free and easy place? You don't have to work. You just sit in a fancy, rich house. That sort of, no, they probably weren't talking about that.
Yeah, well.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been dealing with people. Now, down here, the people at Camp Paradise are sort of a particular selection of the homeless, so you can't really make a judgment on them. But a lot of these are people who are really trying to change their lives around. They've got jobs. They're getting off drugs and alcohol. Some of them are off, but some of them are just in the transition stage. I've dealt with them, trying to help them out, and they're not. Some of them are long-time residents. A lot of them are long-time residents. Some of them have families here that go way back. So, and yet these charges are made. Oh, well, these are people who move in from all over the place just to have the free ride at Santa Cruz. It's so inaccurate and so prejudiced.
I think it's like the kicking the dog syndrome. When the boss kicks you, you come home and, you know, beat up your spouse and kick the dog. You know, I mean, you got to have somebody to kick, so it's nice to have somebody lower than you. It's the basis to some extent for race prejudice and, I guess, white privilege, too. You know, I mean, if you can exercise your power over someone, it enables you to live another day under the power of someone else.
Well, you know, there's a chance for real cooperation between people who want social justice and people who want environmental wisdom. And, you know, not only possible to do both, it's necessary. If you try to do one without the other, it's just not going to work, because if you try to clean up the place, clean up the river without handling the homeless problem, it's just going to be endless tasks. People are going to keep coming back in.
Unless you want to turn it into a complete yuppie playground where you could always cut off the hand of every homeless person you find within a mile radius, and that would probably drive them out of town, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, and that would be a way of making sure that people didn't camp by the river. I mean, and then you'd make sure also that lower income people weren't anywhere near the town except in those, you know, few remaining places where they could be.
Except those lower income people are doing the jobs around here.
Well, we could ship them in and then ship them out the way the Israelis do the Palestinians, right?
Yeah, and then, but then we have to close the borders if they get uppity, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, just you mow down a few of them with machine guns and you'll be okay. And, you know, after all, they're only throwing rocks.
Yeah.
Well, occasionally you got your suicide bomber. It's true. You got to watch out.
Well, yeah. That sounds like too much escalation.
This is not a paid political announcement.
Well, are you going to get on to that interview?
I think so.
Okay.
All righty. Thank you for calling
in.
Bye-bye.
This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, just about to get on to the promised Patricia Matichek interview. Actually, first, we have a little bit of an interview with one of the merchants downtown on Camp Paradise. And actually, this is a woman I kind of know in passing. She at one time was helpful to a homeless street vendor who was vending street spirits, actually the master vendor who was distributing to other vendors for a period of time. She runs the kiosk, one of the kiosks near the bookshop Santa Cruz, not the flower shop, but the one further up. Let's hear that now. As soon as we find the proper tape, that is. You, of course, are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and I am, in fact, your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris, and it's amazing how tapes disappear around here, I'll tell you. But I think we'll go into it in just a moment. Don't go away.
So we're having a conversation on the street here at 15 to 4 in front of Borders, talking to Cosmic Chris, that man about music on the Pacific Garden Mall, and the man at the Camp Paradise table.
Hello.
Your name, sir?
Mike.
And Mike, what do you think, Chris? You say you've gotten more hostile kind of remarks, comments, and actions from passing cars recently?
Well, there just seems to be a contingency of people that are really passing judgment on homeless or, you know, impoverished people. There's a real socio-economic prejudice starting to rear its ugly head lately. And it's coming out in forms of a lot of verbal and physical violence around Santa Cruz and Pacific Mall and the area.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you can't target any specific group, but it's kind of like, you know, a militia bent on, you know, haranguing and, you know, dealing out their idea of justice on impoverished or homeless people. And they're just starting to really strike out in anger, these people that, you know, are financially better off than others. And so they look down for an easy prey, and they go after, you know.
Well, I know we had this problem with the meter guy here who seemed first he was targeting Larry Templeton's vehicle, then he was targeting the tent vehicle, which has got a placard on it, the handicap placard, and it looks like a form of discrimination. The meter man was claiming, oh, I'm not discriminating against the protest, it has nothing to do about the protest, but the next thing he said was, but why do you have to have all those signs on your car anyway? So,
well,
you know, I'm not sure what he's talking about, you know.
And besides that, it's well known, you know, at least on realistic levels, you know, most people feed their meters for hours on end on this section of town because parking's really tough. And generally, it's not a problem. They don't enforce that heavily because they know it's hard to have to move your car every 2 hours when you're taking care of some business down here that takes you longer than that. But it appears as though that the Camp Paradise people are now being targeted for whatever reasons those officials feel it's necessary to target and start, you know, firing on, so to speak, the Camp Paradise people.
I think you're right. Yeah, any musical comments before we leave you, Cosmic Chris?
Yeah, you know, keep the music alive. It's a way to shed light through sound.
Thank you. Any notes you wish to give us before we...
Yeah, one note.
Thank you.
And hopefully, as I said, the tabling will resume by a group concerned with broader rights for the homeless community, as well as those folks at Camp Paradise. Just join us, sleep together tonight. There's going to be an actual, going to be an informal meeting of Just activists at 137 Felker Street tonight at 7:30. For folks who are interested, that's near, kind of near the Camp Paradise turnoff, and anybody's welcome to come to that. Again, our interest is in setting up a response to an attack on Camp Paradise, or generally a broader response that involves a kind of high-profile, peaceful civil disobedience that will hopefully deter any ill-advised attack on Camp Paradise, such as we've seen repeatedly threatened by the police department, as well as attacks on other homeless encampments, or essentially survival encampments. And I actually think we have found